Welcome to episode 7 of the Marian Vermeijzen podcast. I'm Marian Vermeijzen. In this podcast, my goal is to have interesting conversations with interesting people and to have fun doing it. So today I'm interviewing Todd Martin. He lives in Tucson, Arizona. He hired me at Intuit, and he was an executive there until recently when he started the Tucson Tamale Company. The Tucson Tamale Company opened its doors in November of 2008. Their wonderful hand-rolled tamales and fresh salsas are getting rave reviews. Todd is the owner, CEO, president, and chef. I tremendously admire Todd for his positive, ethical, and fun approach to life, and I love his tamales. Todd, thanks so much for agreeing to be interviewed on my podcast. How's business?
Business has been great.
How did the Tucson Tamale Company get started?
You mean besides all the hard work?
Yeah. Well, so when did you first get the idea?
it was an idea that kind of had two beginnings. The first one was years ago, Sherry and I just deciding that we eventually wanted to get into business for ourselves and we wanted to be in the food business. And that was about as far as we had gone, but we had started planning, you know, from a financial perspective that we were going to be opening a business at some point. And then a couple of years ago, it struck me that gourmet tamales was a very underserved market, a new market, really, and we started planning for the tamale business, and that led to me, of course, leaving Intuit, taking care of some things with our family, but then opening up the first of what hopefully is many Tucson tamale companies.
That's great. Well, I have to tell you, I love them. I think they're fantastic. So
wonderful.
So
yeah, you were our first winner of free tamales.
That's right. Well, one of these days, I want to actually get to the store and not have to do it mail order. The restaurant, I guess. So was it hard to go from a position managing a big staff at Intuit to starting your own business?
It was. It was harder than I anticipated, because you get so used to certain routines and the certain way things go in corporate America. I knew it was going to be different. I just never realized how different.
Uh-huh.
Because I had been in the 80s, I had my own business, so I'd been there. But again, you kind of lose touch with the day to day of what needs to happen. And so there was a lot of I shouldn't say unexpected things. I think everything was kind of expected, but it was my biggest aha is just that things take more time than you think they do, especially when you're doing most of it yourself instead of having, you know, teams of people around you to get things done. Just even, you know, getting, lining up a masa supplier, for example, it seems like a fairly straightforward thing. You call a couple companies, you get some samples, you get pricing, and you make a decision. Well, it turns out it's actually about 3-4 full days worth of work to get all that done.
Wow. Now masa is the cornmeal, is that right? That's probably
it's
oversimplified.
Not cornmeal. It is the corn goes through the kernel corn goes through a process called nixtamalization, which is it's soaked in a solution of water and lime, and then it is, and that removes the outside hull, and then it is ground, and that the corn ground by itself is called unprepared masa, and then we take and you add to it, we add a heart healthy oil blend, we add some vegetable broth, and a little salt and baking powder, and you blend that together, and that now becomes your prepared masa, which is the base for all your tamales.
So do you do your own, you don't do your own soaking and everything, but what point do you get the masa?
No, we get it, we get it, the unprepared masa, so we don't have the facility here to grind the corn.
Right.
We have that done for us. But then we get it, it's unprepared, and then we do the rest of the preparation at that point.
Okay. So when did you first, when, you know, how long have you been making tamales? Your whole life, or?
No, just about 15 years.
Uh-huh.
And I say just about. First time I made tamales was 15 years ago, and it was with Sherry's my wife. It was with her family. She said we were going to go make tamales. This was like a Thursday or Friday. She said, Saturday morning we're going over to my parents to make tamales. And I said, okay. And I thought, you know, we'll be over there for an hour or two, and then we'll go do whatever else. Well, it turns out we got there, and there's 5 bushels of corn and 20 people and 5 cases of beer. And the next thing you know, it's a 12-hour day, and we've made, you know, 75 dozen tamales.
Wow.
And so ever since then, I just would, you know, make them, experiment, and things like that.
So tamale making can be a real family experience, or that's party experience,
well,
almost.
Yeah, I mean, making tamales, it's not like making a sandwich where you can go in and pull a couple slices of bread and you make a sandwich for yourself. To make a tamale, if you're going to make one, you might as well make 10 dozen. If you're going to make 10 dozen, you might as well make 50 dozen, because the, you know, the work involved is not any more, you know, to make bigger quantities, because it is such a labor-intensive process. So
right. That's
why you don't see people, you know, normally making tamales at home. And when you do see them making them at home, it's for special occasions. It's in the holidays. It's when they can get, you know, a gathering of folks together to do that.
Do you have a current favorite tamale that you can describe for me? One of yours?
Oh, that's like saying my favorite child, right? I go through phases where I'll eat one for a couple of days. But I really, you know, I have one or two tamales every day. And part of what I do is, you know, from just a quality perspective, I try to make sure that I always have different ones. Today we're actually going to be making a brand new one. It's not brand new. We do an Italian squash and pepper tamale. It's one of our vegan tamales. Today we're going to make it with mozzarella. And being a cheese lover, of course, anytime I put cheese in one, it just makes it, in my opinion, that much better.
Mm.
So today my favorite's going to be the Naples with cheese, with mozzarella cheese.
Ooh, sounds fantastic. So I think you recently expanded your production space, didn't you?
We kind of reconfigured our space so we have more production area, but it's still really too small for what we're going to need. We need to get to we need 3-4 times the refrigeration space that we currently have, and that's our big holdup right now.
Wow. Do you ballpark, how many tamales do you make a day?
Well, right now, you know, we look at it on a weekly basis because
there's
a lot of factors that can impact the daily stuff. But right now, we're making about 3,000 a week.
Okay, 3,000 a week's more than most people would make anyway. Are there some challenges to making them in bulk?
Oh, well, again, it's the you know, you really can't automate any part of the process because it's a handmade product. So
mm-hmm. Everything
about it, you know, if you increase the number of tamales you're going to make, you have to increase all aspects of, you know, your labor, your purchasing, your prep work. So it's the challenge are just of bringing in, you know, getting people trained. And it's not a easy job to learn, really, rolling a good tamale.
Interesting. So I know you just also extended your hours. Was that kind of part of the business plan to eventually do that? You were just lunch originally, weren't you, to have lunch, and you extended to dinner? Is that right?
Yeah. We're now open Tuesday through Friday till 7 p.m. And, you know, the plan is always to keep expanding, but again, we have to be just thoughtful about it and We're going to be adding some new things to the menu, which is going to be more intensive from a cooking perspective. But, you know, we need to keep doing that. We need to keep growing and doing our form of innovation.
That makes sense. So you're wearing a lot of hats, I think. Are you just working nonstop? How do you manage to fit in family time?
Yeah, pretty much work nonstop, but you just always find a way.
Do you set aside some time that you try not to be working?
Well, I try to Sundays. Uh-huh. You know, we're closed on Sundays, so I try to make sure that we are, you know, not have anything to do. But there's always, I shouldn't say always, but every other Sunday there's something. We had a farmer's market yesterday, so I didn't work it myself, but I still had to come in and get it set up. So I spent about an hour down here.
Okay.
But normally I just try to make sure that I have Sundays off.
That makes sense. How did your, I know you're back, like you said, you had a background in the restaurant business. How did your background help you when starting out here?
Well, I think the first thing is just I was prepared for the amount of time I was going to spend in the shop here. And so the hours weren't unexpected. The hard work wasn't unexpected. But, you know, when you were in the business when you were 28 years old, and then when you get back into it when you're 50 years old, you realize that age does take its toll.
It's very true.
And what I could do when I was 28 and not feel it is a little bit different than today.
Yeah. So, do you manage the restaurant you work for in Denver? Is that right? You were your manager back then?
Yeah, well, I owned a restaurant in Denver. I managed some, and I owned one, and then I also had a catering business.
How is that, other than the age thing, is it other ways that that's been different than this experience?
Yeah, I think when you're in your 20s, you're invincible, and everything you do just kind of confirms that. When you're 50, you realize you're not invincible, and everything that happens confirms that.
any specific stories you want to share about that?
If it was 6 o'clock at night and somebody didn't show up, and this was when I had the restaurant, you know, back in the 80s, and if I had to work till 10:30, it was not that big a deal. And
right.
And today, if at 7 o'clock, if you know, it's time for me to go, I just physically, you know, it just gets harder.
Right, right. What's your vision for the Tucson Tamale Company?
Well, we want to be a you know, a national brand. We are really, I mean, we have the shop here, but our ultimate focus is going to be getting into retail markets.
Mm-hmm.
And expanding, you know, kind of logically through first Arizona and then, you know, the neighboring states, California, New Mexico, Colorado, Nevada. And you know, the big thing that we need to figure out from a production standpoint, the plan calls for us to have production facilities located, you know, in all the major areas, because again, this is not something that you can really automate. So what we have to do is have facilities that are close, you know, from a distribution standpoint. So we'll have a facility and then we'll be able to distribute into that local area.
Wow. So how far in the future are you looking at expanding at this point? Or when what's the next step, I guess, is more what I'm asking.
Well, right now we just need to make sure we get through we need to make sure that we get through the holiday season, because of course this is our busy, busy season.
Oh, right.
And then, you know, the increased production, the capacity that we're going to have to get through December, hopefully we'll be able to maintain that level of production, and then we'll go into the Phoenix market in January. And then hopefully by next summer we will get into a market. I'd like to, from a personal standpoint, I want to get into the Denver market,
because mm-hmm.
that's where my family is, and so it would be nice to have a presence up there. But I think the next step is just we need to get through the holidays. We want to get Phoenix going the first of the year, and then we'll see how that goes.
Oh.
I'm sure we're going to learn a lot about how we, you know, we know how it works down here. We know what the challenges have been in this market. Going into Phoenix, I think, is going to be, you know, a whole new set of challenges for us.
Oh, absolutely. So I know I've ordered tamales from your mail order a few times. What were the challenges for getting into the mail order business?
Well, believe it or not, as many people out there, the mail order food was finding information on how to do it. Packaging, where do we get packaging? Again, that was one of the things that, you know, I thought it would be a couple of phone calls. Salespeople would come down with their samples. We'd pick the boxes. We'd, you know, find an expert in packaging and shipping, and probably spent a good, you know, 60, 70 hours with different folks trying to put all the pieces together, because there was nobody, you know, from the FedEx, UPS people that, you know, had an end-to-end view of what needs to happen to have a successful shipping business.
Huh.
So, you know, I really thought that it was going to be easier to assemble all the pieces, but again, it was just a learning.
Wow. So you have a blog, and you're on Twitter, and you have a Facebook and YouTube. Do you think that social media has helped the business?
Here's my learning about social media, is that you have to have a strong social media presence. That in itself, though, does not drive a lot of business. It does drive some. But what really happens is that social presence turns into a lot of traditional media. So I've had, we've had four different reviews in newspapers. We've had four or five business articles. We were just named Best Tamales in Tucson. So we've gotten a lot of traditional press, and that traditional press was based on our social presence.
So what's the most fun about what you're doing?
Oh, just, you know, the people.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the crew, but the customers. The customers are wonderful. You know, the support you get, it's at least once a day somebody says, oh, I want you guys to do so well because I, you know, love what you do. And when you hear things like that, it's just always heartwarming and always comes at the right time, too.
Oh, that's neat.
If you're having a bad day, there'll be a customer come in that just absolutely loves you and what you're doing, and it makes it all worthwhile.
So I know you're, like you said, you're working almost 24 hours a day. What would you do if you had more time right now?
Oh, when I have more time, I'm going to start another business.
So you've got it under your skin, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
So, I noticed that under education on LinkedIn, you quote Mark Twain. You say, a man who carries a cat by the tail learns something he can learn in no other way.
Yeah.
How does that apply to you, and what advice do you give kids just starting out?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm a huge believer in education. Everybody needs a strong formal education. And, you know, the if you can get college is great. But at the end of the day, you know, the real learnings come when you're actually out there doing whatever it is you're doing. And, you know, like the quote says, when you carry the cat by the tail, you learn something you can learn in no other way. So no matter what the books say, no matter what the, you know, pundits say, until you're out there doing it, you just don't really have a full understanding of it.
Huh, interesting. I think that's really true. What advice do you give people who say they want to start their own business?
Well, the first thing is go for it. But the biggest piece of advice is, you know, the one thing that I looked at, and the Cherry and I looked at is not the one thing. One of the things is why do small businesses fail? And you can look at all kinds of data, and it'll say, oh, restaurants fail more often, or this does or that does. But the truth is, it's not a type of business that fails. It's the majority of failures have to do with cash flow. And when I say the majority of failures, there's some businesses that are bad concepts, you know, that are poorly managed, kind of put those aside because we felt confident in our concept, in our management, in our product, you know, our service. So we knew that we had those pieces. But even businesses that had all those pieces still failed. So the question is, why do they fail? And in my assessment, it's been they fail because of cash flow. And a lot of businesses, they go into business, and not only are you trying to establish yourself and, you know, grow a business, but then a lot of folks would try to, you know, they needed their personal income also. And to trying to make money, you know, pull money out of a new business created some serious cash flow issues for other businesses. So, you know, the one thing that Sherry and I looked at is that she obviously is still working at Intuit, and she, you know, has no plans on leaving, because our financial plan for our personal finances is that, you know, we have no intention of taking anything out of the business for at least the first 2 years, and then maybe even longer. So we needed to make sure that our, you know, we could support ourselves without any income from the business for the first few years. And so that's really allowed us to, you know, make great decisions for the business and to, you know, still have a good life at home. And so we're not stressed about the finances, which is, can be a, you know, difficult thing for people if they don't manage and think about that correctly. So my biggest piece of advice is just, if you really want to start a successful business, is make sure that you don't have to count on it for income for a couple of years. Give yourself that time to, you know, build your business.
That's very interesting. Does the current healthcare plans and everything, does that concern you at all? What might happen with small businesses and health insurance?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's you know, at the end of the day, I'm in favor of a single-payer option. You know, I think that would actually ultimately help small businesses, because right now we don't offer any benefits. And so if there was a, you know, like Medicare, like the VA system, if there was government health care out there, I think it would actually would help everybody.
Right. So if there was a mandate for you that you had to offer benefits to your employees, then I assume that would just have to be passed on in prices to the, in the end, to the consumer?
Yeah, I mean, and all the bills that I've seen, you know, there are thresholds that you have to meet from a number of employees and volume standpoint, which we're not at yet, but, you know, the dynamic at that point would change to, you know, I think you have to then at that point rethink what it is that you want to do with your business.
Right.
Because, quite frankly, healthcare is a whole, that's just a whole nother ball of wax there.
That's for sure. So how would you sum up your philosophy about life and business and your kind of your approach to this whole thing? Do you have a philosophy?
Well, part of it is just in our mission statement, simplify, sustain, and celebrate. I mean, it's, you know, just, you got to love what you're doing, and you got to do something. But the other one was eat everything good, treat everyone good. You know, just keep it simple. You know, it's not that hard to figure out, but, you know, it has to be enjoyable.
Oh,
at the end of the day.
That's great. Well, I, like I said, I love your tamales, and I really appreciate you doing this morning. It's been fun, and I'm cheering for you, so I can't wait till I can come go buy them in the store in Reno.
Yeah, excellent.
All right, thanks a million, Todd.
Okay, Marion, thank you.
That ends Episode 7 of the Marion Vermeersen Podcast. Since recording this episode, Todd let his fans on Facebook know that Gourmet Magazine was at the Tucson Tamale Company doing a photo shoot for their upcoming article on green corn tamales. Of course, the Tucson Tamale Company will be featured in the article, so watch for that. I've put links to the Tucson Tamale Company website in the show notes at marianvermazin.blogs.com/mv-podcast. I'd like to thank Todd again for taking the time to talk with me today. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm looking forward to watching the Tucson Tamale Company grow and expand. I urge you to explore the Tucson Tamale Company website, read some reviews, and order some tamales. The music at the beginning and the end of the show is the Latin Project playing Dizzy Gillespie's jazz standard A Night in Tunisia. I am eager to hear all your feedback and comments, so please email me at marian.vermazin@gmail.com or make a comment on my blog. Thanks for listening.